Welcome back to McKinsey on China. I'm Glenn Leibowitz. China has one of the world's largest and most complex distribution networks for moving consumer goods. What should companies do to ensure that their products are delivered efficiently and profitably? In this podcast, Nick Leung talks to Daniel Zipser and Felix Po about a new survey that takes a closer look at this topic. Daniel is a partner who leads McKinsey's marketing and sales practice in China. Felix is a partner with their consumer practice in China. Nick is managing partner of McKinsey's Greater China practice.
Today we're talking about consumer products, and specifically getting products to Chinese consumers productively. Joining us in the conversation, we have Daniel Zipser, head of our consumer our marketing practice here in Greater China, and Felix Po, one of our colleagues who does the most work with consumer companies both in China and across the region. So you guys have done a recent survey, which we'll cover in a minute, but why don't you kick us off, Daniel, and tell us why is this an important and strategic topic for our FMCG clients?
Thank you, Nick. Our FMCG clients in China, both international as well as local, have a period of rapid growth, plus 20%. Unfortunately, these days are over. In the softer economy these days, they still say significant growth, but it's more in the single digits. So in these days, there are profitability pressures to keep the profit target they have in light of the remaining growth targets. So it has increased in importance the last 12 to 18 months to work with them on the distribution of their products and how to get them most productively, most profitable to the Chinese consumers.
So it's a classic situation. We've seen this across multiple sectors, is that essentially the slowdown is beginning to reveal that there are some issues around how things, some business practices and business models which haven't been as effective as others, and these haven't really surfaced until the slowdown.
That is very right. I think in the old days, the model were not efficient, but it didn't matter because in times of 25-30% growth, you can overlook that and you still see high profits. I think that is changing now.
Right. But this has been the mantra for a little while now. So presumably this is not brand new, and that, you know, companies have been looking to squeeze productivity out of their distribution bases now for a while now, right?
How I would say it is that it has hit other industries first. So if you talk about hypermarkets, I think they're definitely hit and in this stage for already 4 or 5 years. Most of the retailers actually are in that position. In FMCG, it's a more recent phenomenon. So we talk really about the last 12 to 18 months where it's really hitting them hard.
So in this survey that you've conducted of these FMCG companies, I think what you've done is you've identified a series of myths, as you call them, or received wisdom, and then having looked in more detail at what the key success factors are for excellent distributors in the market, you're saying, you know, what's actually different, right? So what would be one of those more interesting themes?
I think in this world in China of fragmentation, there was always a common myth saying that the winners focus actually on a few national key accounts and a few distributors for the country. And there was always this, the less, the better. I think we see today that the survey supports that is not the reality. Actually, it is the opposite. So we do see actually a regional key account being a better choice. And the same with distribution, with distributors. Given the fragmented landscape and regional differences, we also do see here the need still to have a high number of more than 100 distributors for a substantial business.
And so if we're saying essentially that a national approach in terms of a broad national approach in terms of key accounts across the whole country and an approach across the whole country don't work, and we need to focus on something which is a little more regional, both in terms of the choice of key accounts and in terms of the choice of distributors, does that mean that then the organization and decision rights within the FMCG companies also need to adapt to something which is a little more regional, perhaps a little lower down in terms of the amount of decision rights in the company?
Absolutely. And this is very often a conflict within what we're seeing within the organization. Because there's always a strong, basically, belief that a central steering is required to succeed in China. At the same time, we see from both a customer as well as a trade perspective that we do require a regional approach with regional decision rights, with regional budgets as well.
In another context, this kind of fragmentation might lead to higher margins, presumably, right? If you are dealing with multiple counterparties, both in terms of distributors and key accounts, presumably that means that the relative negotiating positions are in favor of the product companies. Does that work out in China? Do we see companies able to capture more value from this fragmentation in the counterparties?
What we've typically found is that companies that have ruthlessly prioritized and segmented the hundreds of key accounts that are available to them, and also correspondingly have done the same for their distributor base, are the winners, able to grow faster than their peers and keep cost neutral as a percentage of sales. It's only when you have an indiscriminate model or hand things over to a middleman without actively managing them that you run into all sorts of trouble and costs basically escalate beyond sales growth.
And I think the same, Felix, what you're saying on the key accounts, I would say also holds true for distributors. For many years, we talked about consolidation of distributors, building off strong provincial or even national distributors. I think today we need to realize that has not happened to the same degree. So I think the old basically belief that you need to minimize the number of distributors, you need to build exclusive distributors for a province or even banking on national distributors, I don't think that's no longer the case. What do you think, Felix?
I think the reality that we must acknowledge is that because of the incredibly fragmented trade landscape we see in China, companies are going to have to use more distributors than just about anywhere else in the world. There is no such thing as a single high-capability national distributor. And what that means is, in order to distribute and win at scale in China, you have to work with literally hundreds of partners. And that obviously leads to its own complexities and the need for specific capabilities. For the first time ever, we can actually quantify this, where we say that winning companies typically have 150 distributors for every 1 billion renminbi of revenue, versus other companies that have northwards of over 300 distributors for that same amount of revenue. So I think the answer for China is that inevitably, you know, any company will still have to manage a large number of distributors, but it's about whittling it down over time and finding that strategic subset. So you're not dealing with thousands of distributors, but rather the 150 that have higher potential for growth that are willing to collaborate with you and essentially can become your strategic partners going forward.
And one of the other things that we always hear is about the data poverty of the environment in China and how that makes it very hard for, you know, particularly consumer companies to operate, because obviously they operate in other markets in a very data-rich environment. What does the survey say about dealing with data poverty?
Having no data or having poor data availability in China is no longer an excuse for companies not to basically invest and to carry out simple analytics that will help them in their decision making. What we found loud and clear from the survey is that winners invest pragmatically in consumer and shopper insights. And these really help guide their pricing and promotion decisions. Let me give you an example. I think it's all too easy to say that we don't have the right, if you will, end consumer data in terms of purchase patterns and what exactly they bought and at what price points. But what we've found winners do is really leverage multiple data sources. There is syndicated retailer data. That's not enough in China. You need to actually have specific partnerships with retailers. A lot of this data is actually available for purchase with retailers whom you have a deep and close relationship with. Winners also leverage different forms of social media. If they have their own e-commerce website, it's just a fantastic source of consumer and shopper insights, incredibly rich. And they also commission specific shopper research. They do all of this and are able to carry out basically things like post-promotional analysis, able to identify which promotions actually succeeded, and then provide their sales and marketing organization with simple rules of thumb.
And finally, Daniel, perhaps you could enlighten us about the role of e-commerce. I think a lot has been said and done about this. Obviously, it's a massive topic throughout China, and it's growing like crazy. But I think in many FMCG companies, there was a general sense that it was kind of hard to do it profitably, just given how thin and early it is. What's our finding on that particular point?
China is the largest e-commerce market in the world and has been so for a while. So I think there's nothing new about that. We also do believe that's here to stay. I think the difference is there's always a belief, particularly in the FMCG world, that the online space actually does not give you the same profits which you're getting distributing your products in the fragmented trade or even in the key accounts. And what we're seeing here is, as a result of the survey, that those companies who get it right, they actually make more money selling their goods online than selling their goods to the traditional channels. And that's new. That's insightful. And when we looked at that, that was also an area where we saw the biggest differences between the companies. Though there's still a lot which follow what I was describing as the loss-making phenomenon, trying to massively invest in their own sites, paying huge marketing fees. At the same time, really, the winner cracked the code here and really do make money.
I know that a lot of the reticence usually in these type of areas is people feel they have to make very large upfront investments, essentially, and then they have to kind of pay for them. They have to earn their way back, and therefore it's kind of like a higher barrier of entry for people who feel they need to make big investments to get into e-commerce. Are you seeing that that's the case, and essentially the winners are those who have the scale to pay back those investments, or are you saying essentially that some people are just going about it wrong and others are making money already quite at lower levels of scale?
I think what you're saying probably holds true for Europe. I think for China, the investment have been kept to a minimal scale. So the winners have not necessarily invested in that market when it comes to selling goods online. There's definitely investment required to capture what Felix was alluding earlier when it comes to getting data about the consumer, getting higher transparency. But when it comes to pure selling, I think China has a very efficient market space model set up to allow profitable sale of goods.
So it's not a question of scale. When you talk about e-commerce profitability and the digital yield, it's not so much a question of those players who've kind of passed the scale hurdle are the ones making money and everyone else is kind of scrambling at the walls. What you're saying essentially is you can actually get digital yield at quite low levels of scale in China, and there's no reason why more companies shouldn't be trying to do it more aggressively.
Absolutely. And I think the most apparent fact to support what you're saying is in the apparel space. Because in the apparel space, you've seen company making hundreds of millions of US dollars with online-only brands.
If we step back from the China market now, I mean, apart from the three things that you mentioned, and I'm sure your report has many others, but the first one about going deep before going broad, the second one about the paucity of data and how to get around that with workarounds, and the third around digital yield. If you look at those three and you say, okay, so what's different about the China market? This was a global survey. So, you know, what can we say in terms of the global comparisons?
China is blazing its own distinctive path. True, when it comes to traditional trade, there are lessons that we can learn from Latin America. But the scale, the complexity, the fragmentation we are dealing with in China is different, even with that region. And when it comes to modern trade, there is certainly no analog from any of the developed markets or even the other developing markets.
Daniel Tipsa, Felix Poe, thank you very much. And fascinating topic, how to get products to Chinese consumers productively.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Sign up to our newsletter to be the first to know when this survey is available. Just head over to mckinseychina.com.